A Story Publishing presents Leashes and Ledgers, Prologue. Just after 7 on a mid-April morning, the city is half awake, its brownstone facades catching a tentative sun while delivery vans idle at the curb. From an omniscient height, the scene appears ordinary, commuters hurrying, espresso machines hissing, yet one figure breaks the rhythm. He is a budget analyst by job title, a father by instinct, and as of last month, a licensed commercial dog walker by necessity. With two leashes clipped to a belt that was never designed for such duty, he pauses at the crosswalk outside his son's elementary school, feeling the tug of a retriever eager for motion and a spaniel still deciding whether puddles are friend or foe. The child responsible for this accidental career stands nearby on crutches, fiberglass cast the color of swimming pool tiles, cheering each successful tug as though it were a three-point shot. Across the avenue, a digital billboard advertises K9 Resorts, sleek logo, spa day packages, franchise opportunities available. The advertisement is the handiwork of Jason Parker, one half of the brother duo whose journey from scrappy neighborhood walkers to multi-million dollar hoteliers has recalibrated what it means to work with dogs. Their ribbon cuttings now draw mayors and television crews. Their franchise disclosure documents read like investment prospectuses for a boutique hotel chain, except the guests eat kibble and sleep on raised cots. The narrator-to-be cannot help glancing at that billboard while corralling his small two-dog pack. It represents a fork he has only begun to imagine, one path paved with spreadsheets, investor decks, and seven-figure buildouts, the other with damp gloves and handwritten thank you notes slipped under apartment doors. For now, he has chosen the simpler path, though the term simple is already losing its innocence. Far away yet oddly present, another voice hovers in the morning air, Kate McDougall, whose London memoir of mud-slicked park paths and rogue terriers serves as a pocket guide for anyone naive enough to think leashes guarantee control. Her stories whisper across the Atlantic, like advice from an older sibling, equal parts cautionary and encouraging, reminding him that a profession dismissed as a side gig can bloom into a calling if approached with rigor and humility. And then there is Leah Meadows, a Boston College senior with four pugs and a borrowed route optimization app that has converted her lunch breaks into a profitable circuit along the Charles River. To onlookers, she is merely another student hustling between seminars, yet her data-driven method foretells an industry reshaped by algorithms. Force-free handling badges, GPS timestamps, micro-insurance activated per stroll, these were niche terms a decade ago. Today, they hover over sidewalk conversations the way weather once did. High above, the omniscient eye registers still another player, less visible but no less pivotal, the municipal clerk who processed the father's license. Her laugh, that this entire venture began with a fractured ankle, echoes in his headphones as an audio note he saved for motivation. She knows the quiet churn of applications, the way single-parent schedules, subway delays, and landlord pet clauses conspire to push ordinary citizens toward commercial dog care. To her, each stamped permit is a small plot point in a wider civic narrative, shrinking households, swelling need, and animals standing in for missing community. The dogs reach the curb just as the pedestrian light blinks green. A scooter slices too quickly around a delivery truck, a blur of acrylic and velocity that forces the walker to shorten the leads in a single practiced motion. Heartbeats race, both human and canine, but crisis passes in a breath. The spaniel finds confidence, the retriever finds a scent, and the father finds confirmation that risk management is more than legal fine print. It is reflex. Somewhere a liability underwriter would applaud the maneuver, though the underwriter's applause, like so much else in this trade, remains invisible and unpaid. Yet the larger question lingers in the morning haze. How did a task once traded for neighborly gratitude evolve into an enterprise spanning venture capital, wellness webinars, and courtrooms debating emotional damages for injured pets? Why are city sidewalks filling with neon vests, smartwatches, and carefully spaced packs limited to two or three dogs by unwritten consensus and written ordinance alike? Those questions trot beside the walker as faithfully as any hound. They follow him through spreadsheets of hourly rates, through late-night searches for care, custody, and control insurance, through readings of census charts showing single-person households outpacing new playground construction. They hover above McDougal's anecdotes and Parker's expansion maps, above Leah's algorithmic roots and the clerk's stamp pad, forming a constellation whose shape is only now becoming clear. At the far end of the block, the school bell rings. The child on crutches waves goodbye, confident his cast will soon be scrawled with canine silhouettes instead of classmates' doodles. The walker turns toward the park, two leashes firm in hand, billboard receding behind him like a question mark fading into daylight. Ahead lie muddy paths, compliance checklists, and an economy that measures success in both wagging tails and venture dollars. Behind him lies the simple ringtone that started everything. For a moment, the city holds its breath, suspended between familiar routines and a future still inventing itself. In that pause, one can almost hear McDougal's terriers splashing the serpentine, Parker's investors clinking coffee cups, Leah's app recalculating for river traffic, and the clerk setting another approval stamp to dry. The chorus is disjointed yet harmonious, a prelude to the deeper exploration that follows. The light changes once more, and footsteps resume. The prologue, like the walker, moves on, aware that every leash, whether leather or metaphor, leads somewhere negotiable, only by placing one foot in front of the other and trusting that curiosity, discipline, and a touch of luck will keep pace. End of prologue. The ringtone echoes through my coat pocket as I swipe the screen and mutter a distracted hello. On the other end is the school nurse, her voice composed yet edged with professional concern. "My son," she explains, "has come down awkwardly after a rebound in the lunchtime basketball game." The preliminary assessment points to a fracture of the left ankle. An ambulance is on its way to the nearest emergency department, but parental presence is strongly advised. In the hush that follows, my routine workday's foundations rearrange themselves. I glance at the spreadsheet in front of me, an uninspiring matrix of departmental budgets, and realize that the next few weeks will orbit entirely around crutches, orthopedic appointments, and improvised childcare. Upon reaching the hospital and seeing my child, foot elevated in a temporary cast and courage holding steady, the question emerges: how will our exuberant retriever Mix receive the exercise he requires while I shuttle between office deadlines and physiotherapy sessions? Friends suggest hiring a walker. My previous impressions of professional walkers hover somewhere between sitcom cameo and hobbyist side gig. Yet a week of research quickly disabuses me of that caricature. I find myself dialing strangers with business cards that read like condensed resumes: insurance verified, canine first aid certified, bonded, background checked. The hourly quotes land firmly on the premium side of my mental ledger, and each conversation leaves me feeling faintly reprimanded for ever thinking the job was simple. The turning point arrives on a rainy Tuesday morning when a work call collides with a surgeon's consult, leaving me desperate for an immediate solution. With uncharacteristic resolve, I post a short notice on the neighborhood forum offering midday walks at a fair rate in exchange for my dog's inclusion. Quite unintentionally, I have opened the door to a parallel economy that, until now, I had passed on city sidewalks without a second thought. Within hours, my phone lights up with inquiries from owners whose schedules are no kinder than mine. One particularly harried voice, apologizing for the background thrum of a busy coffee roaster, asks whether I am willing to handle two spaniels who share both household and temperament. I recall reading an urban safety advisory warning that walking more than two dogs at once can magnify accident risk, though some experienced handlers stretch to three if the animals already know and trust one another. I accept the spaniels, but impose a personal cap. Two at a time, no exceptions. That same night, I reread Kate McDougal's memoir, which chronicles her leap from Sotheby's auction cataloging to founding London's number one dog walking agency. Her reflections feel uncannily relevant. She entered the trade with minimal preparation, armed mostly with a conscience, a map of central London parks, and borrowed leads. Within a single week, she found herself juggling two mismatched terriers whose combined enthusiasm nearly dragged her into the Serpentine. The incident did not deter her. Instead, it clarified the stakes. Reading her account, I see a parallel between her learning curve and my own impending crash course. The next morning, I decipher license requirements on municipal websites. Filing as a commercial dog walker involves a modest application fee, ranging between $50 and $500 depending on business structure, address, and proof of insurance. I discover that higher tiers bundle additional permits for boarding or grooming services. Professional manuals assert that setting firm, premium prices attracts reliable clients rather than bargain hunters. Armed with this counsel, I draft a simple rate sheet with transparent pricing and no discounts for frequency. The first official walk occurs on a windswept afternoon. I shepherd my retriever and the two spaniels along an avenue of brownstones, conscious that passersby are evaluating my leash technique. We reach the park without incident, but mid-loop, one spaniel spots a jogger and executes a spontaneous pirouette that nearly snatches the lead from my grip. My retriever lunges toward a squirrel, and I shorten all leads to half length, regain control, and retreat to a quieter side path. By the time we return the dogs to their doorsteps, their owners greet me with appreciative smiles, unaware of the minor calamity averted. That evening, I log expenses, biodegradable waste bags, a hands-free belt, and a waterproof notebook. The total floats comfortably below $50, a shoestring tally that contrasts starkly with a franchise prospectus describing a Chicago daycare owner's six-figure build-out. By week three, I am managing a micro-roster of six dogs, securing a basic liability policy after a call with an insurance broker who recites bite statistics. The annual premium equates to roughly the revenue from six walks. An exchange I accept after reading a case study where a leash-slipped Labrador collided with a cyclist, resulting in damages that would bankrupt an uninsured walker. As my son's ankle progresses from plaster to a bright blue fiberglass cast, he insists on accompanying me on weekend walks, gamely absorbing breed trivia and client stories. One afternoon, a passerby asks if we are with one of those new apps. I shake my head, realizing that, in less than a month, we have joined a lineage that predates gig economy platforms and smartphone scheduling. During a post-rain twilight walk, a neighboring walker glides past with four dogs triangulated around her hips. I feel a twinge of envy, but remember the professional consensus. Beyond two dogs, risk escalates disproportionately unless the third shares both household and demeanor. Toward the end of the month, I schedule a reflective call with the clerk who processed my license. She chuckles when I disclose that my initial motivation was parental triage after a fractured ankle. Her response strikes me, "That is how most of them start. One urgent need, then a cascade of opportunities." She recounts applicants whose journeys resemble McDougal's mid-2000s leap. Their first invoices scribbled on tear-off pads, their business names registered only after dogs were already overjoyed and muddied from the park. The call ends and I sit in my quiet kitchen considering the improbable arc, from the hospital nurse's voice on day one to a nascent roster of canine clients 30 days later. I have learned that municipal licenses can be obtained for less than the price of a family dinner, that premium pricing is essential gatekeeping, and that the industry's upper tier requires capital commitments soaring into the high six-figure realm. The leash connecting human to dog can become a lifeline, sometimes literal, always emotional. And for the walker at the other end, what begins as a stopgap measure may unfurl into a vocation rich with daily puzzles, fleeting street corner camaraderie, and the quiet satisfaction of returning every animal, tail wagging, to the door from which it set out. The headlines began cascading across my inbox, like puppy videos, once flooding my social media feed. Irresistible, slightly unbelievable, and oddly reassuring during long nights spent thawing my son's gel packs. One early morning alert from a franchise Industry Digest announced that K9 Resorts had just cut the ribbon on its latest Mid-Atlantic flagship. The accompanying press photograph showed Jason Parker and his co-founder brother flanked by a semicircle of city officials, each of them gripping a leash that matched the corporate color palette. I paused over the investment note tucked near the end of the release, which revealed that startup capital for a single site now hovered between $354,000 and a shade above $800,000, a price tag that made my eyes widen. A week earlier, I had skimmed the most recent franchise disclosure document for the same brand, and the numbers read like an escalator climbing out of reach of the average sidewalk professional. Minimum liquid assets approaching $200,000, royalty fees pegged to gross revenue rather than profit, and mandatory training trips that could swallow an entire month of neighborhood income. Even so, 36 new operators had signed letters of intent since the previous summer. The appetite for upscale dog lodging evidently outstrips whatever cautionary tales the internet can muster, a testament to the sector's robust growth. Meanwhile, Kate McDougall's memoir continued to resonate, much like a determined terrier clinging to a favorite toy. Goodreads discussion threads persisted in dissecting her wry anecdotes about mismatched terriers and clients who confused customer service with personal therapy, underscoring the enduring appeal of authentic dog-walking narratives. Barnes & Noble had approved a second paperback printing for the North American market in early spring 2023. Validating the commercial viability of McDougall's tales of mud-splattered persistence. One Saturday afternoon, my son and I detoured past a freshly painted storefront displaying a banner that read, "Fetch Campus Coming Soon." Through the glass, we could see contractors mapping out interior walls with blue tape, a scene echoing the countless other startups that had burst onto the scene in recent years. A laminated document taped to the door summarized the special use permit just granted by the planning board, detailing requirements such as maximum occupancy and staff-to-dog ratios. As I watched, a contractor expertly measured the space, highlighting the blend of business acumenness and canine devotion that defined this industry. The expansion stories are no longer outliers, but a sign of the industry's steady march toward institutional heft. During a lunch break sandwiched between back-to-back walks, I listened to a pet industry analyst on a webcast explain that national spending on boarding and related services had climbed by an inflation-adjusted 11% in the past 4 years. Venture capital, once lukewarm toward any enterprise involving mop buckets, now regards premium pet care as a rare service still resistant to rapid automation. A slide deck materialized on screen showing capital infusions in the mid-7-figure range flowing toward regional chains with catchy names like Wagworks and Positive Stay. Memoir buzz and franchise math may occupy different corners of the cultural map, yet together they chart a single, unmistakable direction. Professional dog care is evolving from a cottage activity to a full-fledged industry. The uptick in educational offerings, such as the International Boarding and Pet Services Association's annual seminar on scaling from leashes to ledgers, which now fills within 48 hours of registration opening, underscores this shift. Tuition stands at just shy of $900 for non-members, a price that reflects the growing demand for professional development in the field. As the industry expands, owner expectations are becoming increasingly sophisticated. Clients now ask about enrichment activities, real-time tracking, and whether I hold certifications in force-free handling. I oblige by citing the continuing education webinar I completed the previous quarter. The term force-free handling, which barely registered outside academic circles 10 years ago, now appears on yard signs and Instagram bios, signaling a shift toward more nuanced and humane practices. The app giants are also adjusting their algorithms to mirror the industry's evolution. One popular platform recently introduced a tiered pricing banner titled Elite, promising walkers who pass an in-person skills evaluation priority placement in search results. The evaluation involves demonstrating safe navigation through simulated urban hazards with three dogs of varying sizes. A promotional video shows candidates steering a beagle, a husky, and a Great Dane around traffic cones while a bicyclist rings a bell nearby. Amid the metrics and marketing, McDougall's continuing resonance serves as a reminder that beneath every growth graphic lies a tangle of practical questions. What happens when the subway stalls and three client clocks keep ticking? How does a handler absorb the emotional aftershock when a trusted golden retriever snaps without warning? As I navigate these complexities, I find myself weighing similar dilemmas in quieter form. That evening, an industry podcast host described canine care as the new craft coffee, local roots, corporate rollout imminent. The analogy struck me as both apt and unsettling. Independent roasters once dotted city corners before conglomerates learned to bottle ambiance at scale. Whether dog care can be standardized without stripping away the tactile humanity at its core remains an open question. As I finalize next month's scheduling grid, a patchwork of solo retriever jaunts and sibling spaniel duos, I keep one ear tuned to both extremes of the conversation, aware that the industry's future will be shaped by the interplay between growth and humanity. The expansion headlines trumpet soaring valuations, but the dog at my side reminds me that success will always return to a simpler calculus. One leash, one animal, one attentive human hand. The need for steady footing on a busy crosswalk never fades. I first noticed the new tempo on a crisp morning while waiting at a crosswalk near the elementary school. A dozen leashes converged at the curb, anchored to walkers glued to their smartwatches, which pulsed with client updates. Just 10 years earlier, that same corner rarely saw more than a single terrier on a retractable lid. Industry advisors say this shift was predictable, driven by rising residential density and falling household size. As city living becomes more compact, the demand for pet care services expands to fill the gaps left by shrinking household sizes and increasingly hectic work schedules. Comprehensive lifestyle surveys conducted by the National Census Bureau confirm that single-person households now dominate many downtown districts. The shift has obvious implications. A roommate can feed a schnauzer at dusk, but a solo tenant on back-to-back shifts often cannot. Professional handbooks by the International Boarding and Pet Services Association highlight this reality, noting that where human roommates vanish, paid caregivers step in. Our neighborhood bulletin board brims with laminated rate cards, despite a flat local birth rate, because the clients are data analysts, new attorneys, and late-night sous chefs whose studio leases prohibit backyard fencing. Technology has accelerated this demographic trend. Smartphone booking platforms now offer push notification discounts for first-time walks, dissolving the friction that once discouraged last-minute scheduling. I recall scrolling through one such app during my son's X-ray follow-up and being struck by how quickly I could find a certified walker. A heat map displayed every available sitter within half a mile, color-coded by arrival window and training credentials. The application's Trust and Safety Board claims that instant matching reduces abandonment rates for midday exercise requests by roughly one quarter. The outcome is observable. Dogs that might have waited until dusk now trot out at noon, logged and timestamped for owner review. The Boston College student I interviewed, after noticing her quartet of pugs moving across the Charles River footbridge, exemplifies the new normal. Remote classes had freed her daylight hours, and a part-time teaching stipend wasn't stretching as far as it once did. She downloaded a route optimization plugin, adjusted the settings for her walking speed, and within 2 weeks was earning enough to offset rent on a small co-op room. Her strategy echoes recommendations in a recent small business primer, which urges newcomers to keep fixed costs under $500 by leveraging existing phones, free mapping software, and borrowed spare leashes. Pandemic restrictions briefly threatened this bootstrap model but unveiled new service categories. A San Francisco firm pivoted to streaming enrichment sessions, charging clients a modest subscription to watch trainers demonstrate scent games and low-impact agility drills using household items. Quarterly filings showed the video tier cushioning overall revenue by approximately 11% during months when outdoor activity faced strict limits. The American Veterinary Medical Association's telehealth toolkit advises providers to diversify into remote engagement, ensuring animal welfare doesn't hinge exclusively on physical proximity. The leash went digital, and even after parks reopened, a sizable minority of subscribers kept the service, citing behavioral improvements in previously anxious dogs. Municipal codes continue to set the outer boundaries for this evolving industry. My most recent renewal package from the city clerk arrived with a new addendum clarifying that commercial walkers under 18 years of age require adult supervision. Training manuals for insurance underwriters applaud such provisions, noting that clearly defined age minimums reduce claim frequency and premium volatility. A stable premium lets small operators project earnings with greater confidence, encouraging professional development spending. Cultural attitudes toward canine well-being have intensified in parallel with regulatory tightening. Owners now ask whether I practice consent-based handling, a term that was once confined to academic circles. Force-free guidelines endorsed by the Pet Professional Guild outline practical steps, allowing the dog to approach the harness, using food lures sparingly, and observing body language for withdrawal cues. I adopted these steps because they aligned with my instincts, and their formal recognition in reputable literature lends persuasive weight during client consultations. Apps have begun mirroring this heightened ethical focus. One major platform rolled out a badge labeled Elite Walker, awarded only after candidates pass an in-person skills demonstration evaluated by a certified trainer. The company's public white paper suggests that profiles displaying the badge receive almost double the booking rate of non-badge counterparts. Technological gatekeepers are codifying professional standards once enforced informally through neighborly reputation. The emotional dimension of urban pet ownership continues to drive demand in subtle ways. Social scientists at metropolitan universities have published data indicating that companion animals mitigate loneliness scores among renters with limited face-to-face interaction outside work. When those renters accept overtime or second jobs, guilt often drives them to purchase additional walks. I witnessed this pattern when a graphic designer on my roster doubled her weekly bookings after her employer shifted to a hybrid schedule that lengthened her average commuter hours. She framed the decision as preventive healthcare for her spaniel, but the subtext was clear: consistent movement for the dog bought peace of mind for the human. Professional literature reinforces this intuition. The Companion Animal Welfare Council warns that insufficient exercise correlates with a measurable uptick in nuisance barking, destructive chewing, and separation distress. Each behavior, if unchecked, erodes the human-animal bond that underpins the entire service economy. In that sense, every rhythmic patter of paws across city asphalt functions as a small insurance premium against relinquishment. The walker benefits through repeat income, the owner through household harmony, and the municipality through reduced shelter intake. Urban branding agencies have seized upon the photogenic allure of dogs against skyline backdrops, weaving canines into marketing campaigns for condos, breweries, and co-working spaces. The collateral effect is a normalization of dog-friendly lifestyles that subtly pressures would-be owners toward adoption and nudges existing owners to upgrade care routines. Commerce and companionship feed each other in a loop that shows no sign of slowing, especially as social media platforms amplify every charming sidewalk snapshot into neighborhood aspiration. Professional manuals emphasize that reliability outweighs novelty. The latest edition of a well-regarded operations guide devotes a chapter to calendar discipline, urging walkers never to chase expansion at the expense of punctual arrival. I recall this counsel when a notification pings with the offer of an extra loop that would overlap my established noon slot. Saying no, though counterintuitive in a gig economy measured by hustle, ultimately sustains client trust and long-term demand. This lesson aligns with broader market data showing that retention, not raw acquisition, drives revenue stability in service sectors with minimal capital barriers and intense competition. The streets keep filling with dogs, and forecasts suggest the pattern will endure. Smartphone coverage may plateau, and demographic curves might flatten, yet the desire for living, breathing companionship in concrete landscapes remains durable. Every trend line, planner projections, insurance bulletins, academic surveys, points toward a single conclusion. City dogs are busier because their humans are busier, and that busyness has become a structural feature of modern urban existence. Our task, whether we carry two leashes or manage a climate-controlled daycare, is to translate that societal momentum into daily routines that protect both paws and peace of mind. The ringtone echoes through my coat pocket as I swipe the screen and mutter a distracted hello. On the other end is the school nurse, her voice composed yet edged with professional concern. "My son," she explains, "has come down awkwardly after a rebound in the lunchtime basketball game. The preliminary assessment points to a fracture of the left ankle. An ambulance is on its way to the nearest emergency department, but parental presence is strongly advised." In the hush that follows, my routine workday's foundations rearrange themselves. I glance at the spreadsheet in front of me, an uninspiring matrix of departmental budgets, and realize that the next few weeks will orbit entirely around crutches, orthopedic appointments, and improvised childcare. Upon reaching the hospital and seeing my child, foot elevated in a temporary cast and courage holding steady, the question emerges: how will our exuberant retriever Mix receive the exercise he requires while I shuttle between office deadlines and physiotherapy sessions? Friends suggest hiring a walker. My previous impressions of professional walkers hover somewhere between sitcom cameo and hobbyist side gig, yet a week of research quickly disabuses me of that caricature. I find myself dialing strangers with business cards that read like condensed resumes: insurance verified, canine first aid certified, bonded, background checked. The hourly quotes land firmly on the premium side of my mental ledger, and each conversation leaves me feeling faintly reprimanded for ever thinking the job was simple. The turning point arrives on a rainy Tuesday morning when a work call collides with a surgeon's consult, leaving me desperate for an immediate solution. With uncharacteristic resolve, I post a short notice on the neighborhood forum, offering midday walks at a fair rate in exchange for my dog's inclusion. Quite unintentionally, I have opened the door to a parallel economy that until now I had passed on city sidewalks without a second thought. Within hours, my phone lights up with inquiries from owners whose schedules are no kinder than mine. One particularly harried voice, apologizing for the background thrum of a busy coffee roaster, asks whether I am willing to handle two spaniels who share both household and temperament. I recall reading an urban safety advisory warning that walking more than two dogs at once can magnify accident risk, though some experienced handlers stretch to three if the animals already know and trust one another. I accept the spaniels, but impose a personal cap. Two at a time, no exceptions. That same night, I reread Kate McDougall's memoir, which chronicles her leap from Sotheby's auction cataloging to founding London's number one dog walking agency. Her reflections feel uncannily relevant. She entered the trade with minimal preparation, armed mostly with a conscience, a map of central London parks, and borrowed leads. Within a single week, she found herself juggling two mismatched terriers whose combined enthusiasm nearly dragged her into the Serpentine. The incident did not deter her. Instead, it clarified the stakes. Reading her account, I see a parallel between her learning curve and my own impending crash course. The next morning, I decipher license requirements on municipal websites. Filing as a commercial dog walker involves a modest application fee ranging between $50 and $500 depending on business structure, address, and proof of insurance. I discover that higher tiers bundle additional permits for boarding or grooming services. Professional manuals assert that setting firm, premium prices attracts reliable clients rather than bargain hunters. Armed with this counsel, I draft a simple rate sheet with transparent pricing and no discounts for frequency. The first official walk occurs on a windswept afternoon. I shepherd my retriever and the two spaniels along an avenue of brownstones, conscious that passersby are evaluating my leash technique. We reach the park without incident, but mid-loop, one spaniel spots a jogger and executes a spontaneous pirouette that nearly snatches the lead from my grip. My retriever lunges toward a squirrel, and I shorten all leads to half length, regain control, and retreat to a quieter side path. By the time we return the dogs to their doorsteps, their owners greet me with appreciative smiles, unaware of the minor calamity averted. That evening, I log expenses: biodegradable waste bags, a hands-free belt, and a waterproof notebook. The total floats comfortably below $50, a shoestring tally that contrasts starkly with a franchise prospectus describing a Chicago daycare owner's six-figure build-out. By week three, I am managing a micro-roster of six dogs, securing a basic liability policy after a call with an insurance broker who recites bite statistics. The annual premium equates to roughly the revenue from six walks, an exchange I accept after reading a case study where a leash-slipped Labrador collided with a cyclist, resulting in damages that would bankrupt an uninsured walker. As my son's ankle progresses from plaster to a bright blue fiberglass cast, he insists on accompanying me on weekend walks, gamely absorbing breed trivia and client stories. One afternoon, a passerby asks if we are with one of those new apps. I shake my head, realizing that in less than a month we have joined a lineage that predates gig economy platforms and smartphone scheduling. During a post-rain twilight walk, a neighboring walker glides past with four dogs triangulated around her hips. I feel a twinge of envy, but remember the professional consensus. Beyond two dogs, risk escalates disproportionately unless the third shares both household and demeanor. Toward the end of the month, I schedule a reflective call with the clerk who processed my license. She chuckles when I disclose that my initial motivation was parental triage after a fractured ankle. Her response strikes me: "That is how most of them start. One urgent need, then a cascade of opportunities." She recounts applicants whose journeys resemble McDougal's mid-2000s leap, their first invoices scribbled on tear-off pads, their business names registered only after dogs were already overjoyed and muddied from the park. The call ends, and I sit in my quiet kitchen considering the improbable arc. From the hospital nurse's voice on day one to a nascent roster of canine clients 30 days later. I have learned that municipal licenses can be obtained for less than the price of a family dinner, that premium pricing is essential gatekeeping, and that the industry's upper tier requires capital commitments soaring into the high six-figure realm. The leash connecting human to dog can become a lifeline, sometimes literal, always emotional. And for the walker at the other end, what begins as a stopgap measure may unfurl into a vocation rich with daily puzzles, fleeting street-corner camaraderie, and the quiet satisfaction of returning every animal, tail wagging, to the door from which it set out. The headlines began cascading across my inbox like puppy videos once flooding my social media feed. Irresistible, slightly unbelievable, and oddly reassuring during long nights spent thawing my son's gel packs. One early morning alert from a franchise industry digest announced that K9 Resorts had just cut the ribbon on its latest Mid-Atlantic flagship. The accompanying press photograph showed Jason Parker and his co-founder brother flanked by a semicircle of city officials, each of them gripping a leash that matched the corporate color palette. I paused over the investment note tucked near the end of the release, which revealed that startup capital for a single site now hovered between $354,000 and a shade above $800,000, a price tag that made my eyes widen. A week earlier, I had skimmed the most recent franchise disclosure document for the same brand, and the numbers read like an escalator climbing out of reach of the average sidewalk professional. minimum liquid assets approaching $200,000, royalty fees pegged to gross revenue rather than profit, and mandatory training trips that could swallow an entire month of neighborhood income. Even so, 36 new operators had signed letters of intent since the previous summer. The appetite for upscale dog lodging evidently outstrips whatever cautionary tales the internet can muster, a testament to the sector's robust growth. Meanwhile, Kate McDougall's memoir continued to resonate, much like a determined terrier clinging to a favorite toy. Goodreads discussion threads persisted in dissecting her wry anecdotes about mismatched terriers and clients who confused customer service with personal therapy, underscoring the enduring appeal of authentic dog-walking narratives. Barnes & Noble had approved a second paperback printing for the North American market in early spring 2023, validating the commercial viability of McDougall's tales of mud-splattered persistence. One Saturday afternoon, my son and I detoured past a freshly painted storefront displaying a banner that read, "Fetch Campus, coming soon." Through the glass, we could see contractors mapping out interior walls with blue tape, a scene echoing the countless other startups that had burst onto the scene in recent years. A laminated document taped to the door summarized the special use permit just granted by the planning board, detailing requirements such as maximum occupancy and staff-to-dog ratios. As I watched, a contractor expertly measured the space, highlighting the blend of business acumenness and canine devotion that defined this industry. The expansion stories are no longer outliers, but a sign of the industry's steady march toward institutional heft. During a lunch break sandwiched between back-to-back walks, I listened to a pet industry analyst on a webcast explain that national spending on boarding and related services had climbed by an inflation-adjusted 11% in the past 4 years. Venture capital, once lukewarm toward any enterprise involving mop buckets, now regards premium pet care as a rare service, still resistant to rapid automation. A slide deck materialized on screen showing capital infusions in the mid-seven-figure range flowing toward regional chains with catchy names like Wagworks and Positive Stay. Memoir buzz and franchise math may occupy different corners of the cultural map, yet together they chart a single, unmistakable direction. Professional dog care is evolving from a cottage activity to a full-fledged industry. The uptick in educational offerings, such as the International Boarding and Pet Services Association's annual seminar on Scaling from Leashes to Ledgers, which now fills within 48 hours of registration opening, underscores this shift. Tuition stands at just shy of $900 for non-members, a price that reflects the growing demand for professional development in the field. As the industry expands, owner expectations are becoming increasingly sophisticated. Clients now ask about enrichment activities, real-time tracking, and whether I hold certifications in force-free handling. I oblige by citing the continuing education webinar I completed the previous quarter. The term force-free handling, which barely registered outside academic circles 10 years ago, now appears on yard signs and Instagram bios, signaling a shift toward more nuanced and humane practices. The app giants are also adjusting their algorithms to mirror the industry's evolution. One popular platform recently introduced a tiered pricing banner titled Elite, promising walkers who pass an in-person skills evaluation priority placement in search results. The evaluation involves demonstrating safe navigation through simulated urban hazards with three dogs of varying sizes. A promotional video shows candidates steering a beagle, a husky, and a Great Dane around traffic cones while a bicyclist rings a bell nearby. Amid the metrics and marketing, McDougall's continuing resonance serves as a reminder that beneath every growth graphic lies a tangle of practical questions. What happens when the subway stalls and three client clocks keep ticking? How does a handler absorb the emotional aftershock when a trusted golden retriever snaps without warning? As I navigate these complexities, I find myself weighing similar dilemmas in quieter form. That evening, an industry podcast host described canine care as the new craft coffee, local roots, corporate rollout imminent. The analogy struck me as both apt and unsettling. Independent roasters once dotted city corners before conglomerates learned to bottle ambience at scale. Whether dog care can be standardized without stripping away the tactile humanity at its core remains an open question. As I finalize next month's scheduling grid, a patchwork of solo retriever jaunts and sibling spaniel duos, I keep one ear tuned to both extremes of the conversation, aware that the industry's future will be shaped by the interplay between growth and humanity. The expansion headlines trumpet soaring valuations, but the dog at my side reminds me that success will always return to a simpler calculus. One leash, one animal, one attentive human hand. The need for steady footing on a busy crosswalk never fades. I first noticed the new tempo on a crisp morning while waiting at a crosswalk near the elementary school. A dozen leashes converged at the curb, anchored to walkers glued to their smartwatches, which pulsed with client updates. Just 10 years earlier, that same corner rarely saw more than a single terrier on a retractable lead. Industry advisors say this shift was predictable, driven by rising residential density and falling household size. As city living becomes more compact, the demand for pet care services expands to fill the gaps left by shrinking household sizes and increasingly hectic work schedules. Comprehensive lifestyle surveys conducted by the National Census Bureau confirm that single-person households now dominate many downtown districts. The shift has obvious implications. A roommate can feed a schnauzer at dusk, but a solo tenant on back-to-back shifts often cannot. Professional handbooks by the International Boarding and Pet Services Association highlight this reality, noting that where human roommates vanish, paid caregivers step in. Our neighborhood bulletin board brims with laminated rate cards, despite a flat local birth rate, because the clients are data analysts, new attorneys, and late-night sous chefs whose studio leases prohibit backyard fencing. Technology has accelerated this demographic trend. Smartphone booking platforms now offer push notification discounts for first-time walks, dissolving the friction that once discouraged last-minute scheduling. I recall scrolling through one such app during my son's X-ray follow-up and being struck by how quickly I could find a certified walker. A heat map displayed every available sitter within half a mile, color-coded by arrival window and training credentials. The application's trust and safety board claims that instant matching reduces abandonment rates for midday exercise requests by roughly one quarter. The outcome is observable. Dogs that might have waited until dusk now trot out at noon, logged and time-stamped for owner review. The Boston College student I interviewed after noticing her quartet of pugs moving across the Charles River footbridge exemplifies the new normal. Remote classes had freed her daylight hours, and a part-time teaching stipend wasn't stretching as far as it once did. She downloaded a route optimization plugin, adjusted the settings for her walking speed, and within 2 weeks was earning enough to offset rent on a small co-op room. Her strategy echoes recommendations in a recent small business primer, which urges newcomers to keep fixed costs under $500 by leveraging existing phones, free mapping software, and borrowed spare leashes. Pandemic restrictions briefly threatened this bootstrap model, but unveiled new service categories. A San Francisco firm pivoted to streaming enrichment sessions, charging clients a modest subscription to watch trainers demonstrate scent games and low-impact agility drills using household items. Quarterly filings showed the video tier cushioning overall revenue by approximately 11% during months when outdoor activity faced strict limits. The American Veterinary Medical Association's telehealth toolkit advises providers to diversify into remote engagement, ensuring animal welfare doesn't hinge exclusively on physical proximity. The leash went digital, and even after parks reopened, a sizable minority of subscribers kept the service, citing behavioral improvements in previously anxious dogs. Municipal codes continue to set the outer boundaries for this evolving industry. My most recent renewal package from the city clerk arrived with a new addendum, clarifying that commercial walkers under 18 years of age require adult supervision. Training manuals for insurance underwriters applaud such provisions, noting that clearly defined age minimums reduce claim frequency and premium volatility. A stable premium lets small operators project earnings with greater confidence, encouraging professional development spending. Cultural attitudes toward canine well-being have intensified in parallel with regulatory tightening. Owners now ask whether I practice consent-based handling, a term that was once confined to academic circles. Force-free guidelines endorsed by the Pet Professional Guild outline practical steps, allowing the dog to approach the harness, using food lures sparingly, and observing body language for withdrawal cues. I adopted these steps because they aligned with my instincts, and their formal recognition in reputable literature lends persuasive weight during client consultations. Apps have begun mirroring this heightened ethical focus. One major platform rolled out a badge labeled Elite Walker, awarded only after candidates pass an in-person skills demonstration evaluated by a certified trainer. The company's public white paper suggests that profiles displaying the badge receive almost double the booking rate of non-badged counterparts. Technological gatekeepers are codifying professional standards once enforced informally through neighborly reputation. The emotional dimension of urban pet ownership continues to drive demand in subtle ways. Social scientists at metropolitan universities have published data indicating that companion animals mitigate loneliness scores among renters with limited face-to-face interaction outside work. When those renters accept overtime or second jobs, guilt often drives them to purchase additional walks. I witnessed this pattern when a graphic designer on my roster doubled her weekly bookings after her employer shifted to a hybrid schedule that lengthened her average commuter hours. She framed the decision as preventive healthcare for her spaniel, but the subtext was clear: consistent movement for the dog bought peace of mind for the human. Professional literature reinforces this intuition. The Companion Animal Welfare Council warns that insufficient exercise correlates with a measurable uptick in nuisance barking, destructive chewing, and separation distress. Each behavior, if unchecked, erodes the human-animal bond that underpins the entire service economy. In that sense, every rhythmic patter of paws across city asphalt functions as a small insurance premium against relinquishment. The walker benefits through repeat income, the owner through household harmony, and the municipality through reduced shelter intake. Urban branding agencies have seized upon the photogenic allure of dogs against skyline backdrops, weaving canines into marketing campaigns for condos, breweries, and co-working spaces. The collateral effect is a normalization of dog-friendly lifestyles that subtly pressures would-be owners toward adoption and nudges existing owners to upgrade care routines. Commerce and companionship feed each other in a loop that shows no sign of slowing, especially as social media platforms amplify every charming sidewalk snapshot into neighborhood aspiration. Professional manuals emphasize that reliability outweighs novelty. The latest edition of a well-regarded operations guide devotes a chapter to calendar discipline, urging walkers never to chase expansion at the expense of punctual arrival. I recall this counsel when a notification pings with the offer of an extra loop that would overlap my established noon slot. Saying no, though counterintuitive in a gig economy measured by hustle, ultimately sustains client trust and long-term demand. This lesson aligns with broader market data showing that retention, not raw acquisition, drives revenue stability in service sectors with minimal capital barriers and intense competition. The streets keep filling with dogs, and forecasts suggest the pattern will endure. Smartphone coverage may plateau, and demographic curves might flatten, yet the desire for living, breathing companionship in concrete landscapes remains durable. Every trend line, planner projections, insurance bulletins, academic surveys, points toward a single conclusion. City dogs are busier because their humans are busier, and that busyness has become a structural feature of modern urban existence. Our task, whether we carry two leashes or manage a climate-controlled daycare, is to translate that societal momentum into daily routines that protect both paws and peace of mind. McDougall's memoir is replete with wry anecdotes that underscore the unpredictable nature of professional dog walking. One particularly memorable incident occurred on a rain-slick morning near Regent's Park. She was shepherding a confident spaniel and a timid border terrier when a clap of thunder sent the terrier bolting. The dog wove around a pond filled with swans before vanishing behind a hedge. McDougall dropped to a crouch, offered bits of ham from her sandwich, and even sang a "Please Come Back" jingle before finally tackling the soaked runaway next to a startled pensioner reading the telegraph. The scene played out in front of a group of tourists huddled beneath Union Jack umbrellas, an audience for McDougall's impromptu and soggy performance. Recounting this episode, her tone balances self-deprecation with an undercurrent of hard-won wisdom, acknowledging that such mishaps are both inevitable and invaluable in a profession where no 2 days are alike. To this day, a similar sense of vulnerability turned victory pervades my own work. I once phoned every colleague in my contact list after realizing I had double-booked two large and intolerant Labradors for the same noon slot. With no other option, I resorted to shuttling between the dogs, jogging one at a time around the park. The owners greeted my sweat-drenched return with a mix of amusement and admiration, one even offering me a towel meant for the dog. These moments of transparency forge a unique bond between walker and client, transforming potential disasters into shared victories. Academic studies confirm that transparently acknowledging errors, when paired with sincere effort to rectify them, often leads to higher post-incident satisfaction than flawless but impersonal service. Yet, not every misstep yields heartwarming results. Early in my tenure, I agreed to carry a convalescing pug up multiple flights of stairs, a decision that culminated in a painful back spasm and a glitter-infused thank you card that haunts my wallet to this day. Such incidents serve as reminders that, in a profession fueled by goodwill and word of mouth, the line between endearing anecdote and cautionary tale is often razor thin. Despite these challenges, the industry continues to attract entrepreneurs with grassroots strategies. Jason and Stephen Parker, before co-founding K9 Resorts, used direct mail flyers and bulletin board notices to build their initial client base. Their success suggests that even in an era of digital platforms and venture capital, there remains a place for authentic, community-driven approaches to dog care. As I reflect on these stories, from McDougall's London misadventures to my own rookie mistakes, I am struck by the resilience and resourcefulness that define this profession. Walking dogs may seem like a simple task, but it is one that requires a complex blend of physical stamina, emotional intelligence, and improvisational skill. It is a job where success is measured not in profits or promotions, but in wagging tails, contented sighs, and the quiet satisfaction of knowing that, come what may, you have done right by the animals in your care. I did not discover the real weight of a leash until the night I almost lost it. The scene was unremarkable on paper, a routine dusk stroll with my retriever and a neighbor's elderly beagle, but a delivery scooter shot around the corner faster than either dog or human could process. I yanked both leads at the final second, saving the beagle's tail and, quite possibly, my bank account. Lying awake afterward, I found myself rehearsing courtroom hypotheticals with the intensity of an anxious first-year law student. What if the scooter had clipped the dog, or worse, struck the child who was toddling behind us with a parent in conversation? Would my newly purchased liability policy have covered medical care, lost wages, pain, and the infinite emotional damages that juries sometimes assign to animal injuries? Industry handbooks describe three principal fault lines: bodily injury to humans, injury to animals, and property damage. A fourth, less discussed but increasingly costly category is emotional distress. American tort law has been expanding the conditions under which owners can recover for the anguish they experience when a companion animal is harmed. In a noted New York decision from the mid-2010s, a jury awarded over $500,000 after a leashed terrier slipped free, collided with a cyclist, and required orthopedic surgery. The bulk of the sum addressed the rider's injuries, yet a significant share compensated the dog's family for what judges called psychological devastation. Insurers took notice. Premiums for urban walkers ticked upward within 6 months. Baseline coverage for a solo walker handling no more than two dogs at once still hovers near $200 a year in many states. That figure feels manageable until you read the fine print. Most entry-level policies exclude off-leash activities, breed categories labeled high risk, and any incident occurring when someone under 18 years of age is in charge of the animals. Endorsements that fill those gaps can triple the premium. Add one employee, and carriers often reclassify the business, citing the increased chance of delegation error. The jump can be shocking, from hundreds into the low thousands annually, payable in quarterly installments that arrive whether or not rain has washed out an entire week of walks. Deductibles sit in the background like quiet tripwires. The most common deductible options cluster between $500 and $1,000. Anything lower, underwriters warn, would make small claims too attractive and drive overall costs higher. Sublimits further complicate the picture. One amount for veterinary bills, another for human medical costs, a third for property damage, and sometimes a separate pot for legal defense. The industry's better mentors insist on three pillars: written contracts, disciplined record keeping, and continuing education. Contracts allocate risk with surprising elegance. A single paragraph confirming that all dogs will remain leashed unless the owner provides written direction, and that any off-leash activity is the owner's sole responsibility, has extinguished countless lawsuits before they ignited. Documentation matters just as much. Time-stamped route maps, vaccination records, and notes on behavioral quirks can turn a walker's phone into an evidentiary shield. Education rounds out the triad. Underwriters increasingly reward policyholders who accumulate formal training hours. One national carrier grants a 10% premium reduction to walkers who complete an 8-hour canine first aid course recognized by the Red Cross. Compassion fatigue poses a quieter hazard. Academic psychologists define the syndrome as cumulative stress arising from sustained exposure to others' suffering. A peer-reviewed survey sampled nearly 400 walkers across three metropolitan areas, finding elevated baseline stress comparable to emergency room nurses during flu season. More than a third of participants admitted to chronic sleep disruption, and a similar proportion described recurrent fears of litigation. I counter these risks with a ritual audit: insurance confirmation in the email archive, emergency contacts updated, vet release forms scanned to cloud storage. Only after completing this mental checklist does my breathing slow enough to invite sleep. Large daycare chains have begun experimenting with mental health stipends, small monthly allowances earmarked for counseling or wellness classes. Early data suggest modest gains, slightly lower turnover, and a few percentage points improvement in employee satisfaction surveys. Some municipalities now require proof of a minimum rest interval between scheduled walks, arguing that fatigued handlers pose risks both to dogs and to public safety. Financial instruments have emerged to distribute risk. One startup markets micro coverage activated per walk, charging a nominal fee folded into the booking platform. Seasoned walkers treat such products as supplements rather than substitutes, layering them atop annual policies. At home, the abstract finds form in quieter choices. I now reject any request involving more than two dogs unless they belong to the same family and have documented compatibility. I block a 15-minute buffer between walks and refuse to erase it even when a lucrative slot opens. Most radically, I schedule one evening each week with no dogs, no spreadsheets, and crucially, no news alerts. During that window, my son and I play a board game or attempt a new recipe, and I remind myself that risk is not only something to mitigate, but also something willingly embraced in exchange for freedom, fresh air, and the sight of a tail circling like a metronome of uncomplicated joy. The layered approach, contracts, training, insurance, and self-preservation, gives those worries shape, and once named, they shrink to workable size. Facts, procedures, and well-drawn lines of responsibility are our streetlights. They cannot banish danger, but they do illuminate the path, leash in one hand, peace of mind in the other. As I sit at the kitchen table on the first Sunday of the new quarter, two mugs of cooling coffee at hand, I reluctantly open my spreadsheet to translate the previous month's walking notes into an income statement. The numbers feel both comforting and accusatory, lined up like disciplined dogs in neat rows, reminding me that affection alone won't keep the lights on. My gross revenue calculation begins with 16 solo walks and 20 paired walks, each priced at $35 for a single dog and $45 for a matched duo, totaling just over $1,800 in 4 weeks. This figure surprises me. It's higher than my mental tally during those chilly mornings when my breath looked like cartoon dialogue in the air. Next, I tally my direct costs. PetSafe hand warmers, 4 rolls of compostable waste bags, a reinforced slip lead to replace the one a greyhound shredded, and 2 pairs of water-resistant gloves, total $120. My quarterly insurance, amortized monthly, adds $65, while municipal license renewal is a relatively minor $10 per week. Fuel costs remain low since most clients live within a 2-mile radius, but subway fares for outer ring appointments chip away about $32. After the spreadsheet finishes its arithmetic, I discover my take-home pay for the period is roughly $1,500, translating to about $24 an hour net across 62 working hours. Shifting to a wider lens, I consult industry reports to gauge the broader pet care landscape. The American Pet Products Association estimates total national spending on pets at just under $100 billion in the calendar year 2020, with about $11 billion flowing towards services like grooming, boarding, training, and walking. Analysts at Packaged Facts further break down the total, estimating that pure walking revenue accounts for a touch above $1.5 billion nationwide. The cost of entry for newcomers is relatively low, with a basic walking kit and city permit available for under $200 in most municipalities. In contrast, the capital outlay for a small daycare suite can exceed $150,000 once build out, ventilation upgrades, and soundproofing are factored in. Franchise circulars for upscale brands reveal even steeper initial investments. Initial fees in the mid-5-figure range, total investment requirements nearing $750,000, and ongoing royalties siphoning 6 points off gross receipts. According to the Pet Care Business Association's wage survey, a diligent solo walker in a mid-sized coastal city can earn between $38,000 and $55,000 per year before taxes. Risk management costs escalate with scale. My 2-dog cap allows me to stick with an insurance rider that tops out at $1 million per occurrence, costing $250 annually. In contrast, a colleague who walks 5 dogs at once and transports them to suburban trails pays nearly $900 for a broader policy that covers passenger animals in transit. Consumer willingness to pay for pet care services remains robust, with nearly 1 in 3 urban dog owners stating they would gladly forego streaming subscriptions before canceling professional walks. Demographic trends continue to nudge the demand curve upward, with census data showing solitary professionals and dual-income couples now dominating urban households. Technology also reorders the financial landscape. Subscription-based booking apps take 15% of the fee from each walk I accept through their marketplace, yet they generate clients I might never meet otherwise. By articulating each inflow and outflow in plain language, I map the terrain between passion and poverty. The process reveals manageable levers. Persuading 2 existing clients to upgrade from 3 walks a week to 4, would offset next quarter's insurance installment without extending my daily circuit by more than 15 minutes. Reviewing the latest franchise performance statements confirms the broader market's resilience. Even during the pandemic dip, units that operated for at least 3 full fiscal years reported average annual sales of just under $1 million, down only a single-digit percentage from the prior year. As I review my numbers, my confidence falters, but I notice the subtotal for quarterly equipment replacement appears suspiciously low. Upon reviewing bank statements, I uncover $48 here, $27 there, expenses that weren't entered in the gear column. The oversight is small but symbolic, evidence of the human impulse to understate costs that feel transient. I add the missing expenses, watch my net shrink by $75, and feel a rush of relief. This granular exercise isn't about self-flagellation. It's about navigation. By articulating each inflow and outflow in plain language, I map the terrain between passion and poverty. The process reveals manageable levers that can be adjusted to maintain a sustainable business. Outside, my retriever thumps his tail, oblivious to amortization schedules, yet attuned to the more important ledger of morning light and open air. Tomorrow, we'll walk. I'll earn modestly, spend judiciously, insure thoroughly, and return to this table next month to repeat the ritual. In the arithmetic of leashes and ledgers, sustainability is the steady cadence of balanced columns and a heartbeat unconcerned with decimal drift. Long before dawn brightens the brickwork outside my kitchen window, I sit with a mug of cooling tea and draft a document that reflects the weight of hard-won lessons. Bold headings stare back at me: licensing, insurance, emergency readiness, and client acquisition. Each clause brings back memories of tangled leashes, late-night policy searches, and the gradual imposition of order upon chaos. The past months have taught me that while enthusiasm can carry a dog walker through a challenging week, it is structure, patiently built, that sustains a practice through many unpredictable years. Licensing requirements share a common foundation, despite varying by county. The process begins with proof of identity and address, followed by a standard business license application. Many cities now integrate animal care permits into this process, while others treat commercial dog handling as a specialty category reviewed by the health department. In either case, the municipal clerk requests evidence of liability coverage meeting or exceeding $1 million per occurrence. My insurer emailed the necessary certificate within a single afternoon, which I forwarded along with a modest fee paid electronically to the city portal. A Philadelphia clerk mentioned during a phone interview that complete applications, name, address, insurance, and a signed oath regarding humane treatment are processed in under 10 business days. Attention to detail becomes invaluable when reviewing client contracts. The second layer of compliance involves meticulous record keeping of animal health documents. Urban codes typically require walkers to maintain vaccination proof for each dog they handle, even for a short outing. I store encrypted copies in 2 secure locations: a cloud folder and a password-protected drive on my phone. If an officer requests verification during a walk, I can access the file within seconds. This system also proves useful in emergencies when a veterinarian requests health records immediately. Insurance, a critical safeguard, is approached through a 3-part shield. The broadest layer is general liability, covering bodily injury, property damage, and certain legal fees. The second layer, care, custody, and control insurance, responds when a dog is harmed under professional supervision. Often overlooked, the third layer is non-owned auto coverage for those who occasionally transport animals in personal vehicles. I requested all 3 in a single annual premium and asked for renewal reminders 1 month in advance, allowing time to compare quotes if rates or coverage terms change unexpectedly. Industry professionals emphasize the importance of documentation. Incident logs, signed service agreements, and daily notes on behavioral anomalies are essential. After each walk, I record details while memories are fresh: duration, route, sudden noises that prompted a reaction, and the exact time any symptoms appeared if medical care was necessary. These notes transform anecdotes into evidence and reveal patterns. When a retriever consistently hesitates on metal grates, I adjust the route and inform the owner, demonstrating attentiveness and lowering risk. Emergency protocols extend naturally from this record-keeping practice. My written plan, tested quarterly, begins with a triage question. Is the situation veterinary, environmental, or human? Veterinary cases include injuries, heat exhaustion, or toxic ingestion. Environmental threats range from extreme weather to infrastructure failures. Human emergencies encompass everything from minor sprains to bystander medical crises. A Seattle daycare safety seminar emphasized that clear protocols prevent decision paralysis during crises, ensuring timely and appropriate responses. A companion document lists physical resources always carried in my backpack: a compressible water bowl, saline flush, nonstick gauze, a slip lid, spare waste bags, a compact torch, and a laminated card detailing vital canine health ranges. At home, a sturdier kit includes activated charcoal, a digital thermometer, muzzles in three sizes, and a foldable stretcher rated for dogs up to 100 pounds. These resources have proven their worth in real-life situations, such as safely lifting a senior Labrador that slipped on icy steps. Effective communication forms the third pillar of emergency readiness. Owners receive text updates within 15 minutes of walk completion, even on routine days. When an abnormal event occurs, a concise text summary is sent, followed by a phone call if necessary. Prompt transparency reduces speculation and underscores professionalism, a lesson learned from a veterinary social worker who explained that uncertainty magnifies owner anxiety more than bad news delivered promptly. With compliance and crisis planning in place, focus can shift toward sustainable growth. Three marketing tactics have delivered disproportionate returns. The first is hyperlocal reciprocity, collaborating with a nearby coffee shop to display business cards and offer a complimentary walk to customers showing a same-day receipt in exchange for sharing the shop's seasonal menu with clients. The second is educational visibility, hosting free safety demonstrations at community centers using spring scales to simulate a dog's pull. The third is curated social proof, sharing case studies highlighting behavioral progress or creative enrichment, which attract clients valuing structured cognitive engagement. As revenue stabilizes, decisions about reinvestment arise. Continuing education courses, such as force-free handling certifications, consistently deliver long-term returns. Upgraded equipment, like a waist-mounted carabiner system with shock-absorbing bungee sections, reduces arm strain and enhances the walking experience, often mentioned in reviews. These strategic investments build long-term resilience and client satisfaction. The final strategic consideration centers on exit planning. Sole proprietors rarely contemplate succession until forced by circumstances. Industry consultants recommend drafting a basic continuity letter designating an interim caregiver, authorizing account access, and explaining fee transfers should the owner become incapacitated. Completing this task, alongside updating my will, was a sobering but responsible step. These logistical layers might suggest a life dominated by caution, yet the reality is far from it. When clipping eager dogs to their leads each morning, procedures fade into muscle memory, revealing a profound reward. Joined by my son, now recovered, and our serene retriever, our shared forward motion reflects a family rhythm synchronized with footfalls and wagging tails. The checklists remain, updated and laminated, a quiet testament to resilience and adaptation for our family after unexpected injury, for dogs entrusting themselves to unfamiliar hands, and for a city embracing moments of uncomplicated joy. Thank you for choosing A Story Publishing.